It's now my pleasure to introduce our speaker for our luncheon. Jana Reese is a senior columnist for Religion News Service and is the author of many books, including The Prayer Will, and my personal favorite because I'm so good at living up to most of the title, Flunking Sainthood, A Year of Breaking the Sabbath, Forgetting to Pray, and Still Loving My Neighbor. More recently, she is the author of The Next Mormons, How Millennials Are Changing the LDS Church, published by Oxford University Press in March of 2019. And it's on this book that I asked Jana if she would be willing to share with us some of the things that she's learned and set them within a historical context. So that's what she will do for us today. Jana has a PhD in American Religious History from Columbia University. The title of her talk today is The Mormon Family in the United States, Mapping Social Change from the 1960s to the Present. And Jana has also just been elected as the incoming president of the Mormon Social Sciences Association. So please join with me in welcoming her to MHA.
Well, thank you, Paul. Thank you, all of you who are here today. I'm trained as a historian, and I'm sorry that I've gone over to the dark side a little bit of social science. It was not my intention to do that, but it turns out that studying people who are still alive is kind of interesting. So I'd like to share some of what we've learned about that today and focus particularly on the changing U.S. Mormon family. So my apologies that this is only focusing on the United States. I think that the movement towards studying global Mormonism is so important, but I'm not living up to my own ideals. Here's what we will be covering. First, I'm going to talk about family size. This is actually the longest section of the whole talk. So if you're looking at your watches and you're thinking, how in the world is she going to get through the other four sections? Those are faster. Marriage, women's education and employment, racial diversity in the LDS Church, and sex, because why wouldn't you talk about sex at an academic conference over lunch? So that is where we're going. If for any reason you need to step out, take a phone call, or sit in your chair and take a nap, I'm just going to tell you right now what the main point is. So, in 1960, which is the beginning of our data, the U.S. Mormon family was actually not terribly different from other American families, and then it began to diverge. In some ways, it's coming closer together again. There are some exceptions to that. So I'd like you to keep in your mind the image of an accordion. So the accordion's coming in, and then it's going back out, and it's coming in. And think about that as we go through the five sections and look at each of those topics individually. Before we do that, just a very brief word on methodology. Normally, when I present findings from our study, I am opening every talk with a longer section on methodology, but we just don't have time for that today. So I encourage you to look at the methodology appendix in the Next Mormons book if you have that, or if you want to take a look, they have it over at the Benchmark booth, I think, for sale. Or come up to me afterward and ask whatever questions you have. We should have a few minutes for Q&A at the end. But just to let you know, most social science is done collaboratively. And none of this data would have been possible without the research of Benjamin Knoll, who is a political scientist in Centre College in Kentucky. Ben was instrumental in helping to design, to implement, and then to analyze the results of the 2016 Next Mormons survey. And the other thing I want to say about methodology, just right here at the beginning, is that in order to draw comparisons to Mormons in the past, I'm looking at some other studies as well. LDS membership surveys, especially from 1981, which was made public and actually written about, and then 2007, a study that was leaked and is available to researchers on YouTube, of all places, drawing on Pew Research from several different studies, the 2007 and 2014 religious landscape surveys that Pew has done, not just of Mormons, but of all religions, and then the 2011 study that it conducted just about Mormons in the United States, the 2004 National Study of Youth and Religion, so focusing on adolescent religiosity, and then census data through the decades, and also US General Social Survey data as interpreted by Tim Heaton at BYU, Darren Shercott at SIU, and many others. So this is a broad overview, broad brushstrokes, to just try to see what the big picture patterns are as I was thinking of what might be most useful for you as historians. So what of this data might help you as you're mapping trends? So first, let's talk about family size. In the Next Mormons survey, which was conducted in 2016, we had three different questions about family size. This one was, how many children were there in your family growing up? And with a question like that, we are able to measure generational change to some extent because we're looking at the childhood experiences of people who were older as well as younger. What we see here is that for Mormons in the baby boomer and silent generations, only 1 in 5 grew up in families with just 1 or 2 children. So that was very much a minority position. And the millennials' experience growing up is different, but not dramatically so. So 1 in 3 millennials, when they were kids in the 1980s and the 1990s, grew up in a family with just 1 or 2 children. So there is change there. There is generational change, but it's not huge. Not yet. So let's take a look at United States family size patterns. This is starting in 1950, and you can see here in 1950 that we're at basically 3 children per family. There we go. So that's us, all Americans, starting off in 1950. And then we have what? Someone tell me. Baby boom. Right, so there it is. We're going up to about 3.6 children up through the early 1960s. What happens in the early 1960s that changes this picture? Come on, historians. The birth control pill, and you can see it here on this chart. US fertility basically falls off a cliff. So we're going from 3.6 children here to about 1.7 there. So it's pretty dramatic and very rapid response to the introduction of the birth control pill in the early 1960s. Mormons don't get the memo. Not for a while. So let's map onto this what we know about Mormon fertility nationwide. So in 1981, drawing on the LDS Church's own study in 1981, Mormons are having 3.31 children per family, at the same time that the US number is 1.81. So that's a pretty dramatic difference. And remember what I said about the accordion. This is where the accordion is at its widest in terms of family size. Closer to today, in 2016, in the Next Mormon study, we found 2.42 children for Mormons in America, compared to 1.73 last year in the nation as a whole. So what has happened here is that in 1981, we had a spread of 1.5 children, and now we have a spread of about 7/10 of a child. So somewhere along the way, we lost part of a kid. I would hate to be that person. But we've really halved the spread between the early 80s and now. What we're going to look at here is specifically Utah. Utah is sometimes lazily used as a stand-in for Mormon social science data as a whole, which, you know, 50 years ago was not a bad way to do it because Utah was so heavily LDS, and that has changed quite a lot demographically since then. But we're going to do it too because it's easy. You can see it on a chart. So here where we are starting, The spread is about 7/10 of a child in 1960. Remember that accordion. In 1960, the accordion is here in... Does anybody play the accordion? I mean, what do you call it when you bring the accordion in? No accordion. Okay, you're just not willing to admit to it, right? You're out there, but you're not willing to say that you play the accordion. I get that. You can come up to me later. All right, so 7/10 of a child then. Looking at the early 1980s again, here we see a bigger spread of 1.5 children between the Utah fertility pattern and the nations. One thing I want to point out here before we move on is, do you see that dip down and then dip up in the 1970s? So that's fascinating to me because we were talking at lunch yesterday about Saturday's Warrior, which comes out in 1973 with this very strong anti-birth control message. I just have to wonder, right, if there is any sort of connection in Utah with that going on, because you do see this kind of unexpected bump. And of course, LDS leaders at the same time are also offering guidance about contraception, saying that they would rather we not use contraception. And then here again, we see the shrinkage. So now it's about half a child in Utah, or at least in 2014, between Utah's fertility rate, which is still among the highest in the nation, and the nations as a whole. So that is Utah fertility from 1960 to 2014. The accordion started out pretty wide, or narrow, got pretty wide, and then is narrowing once again. So what we saw from that is that the real change has happened more recently, 1990s, the aughts, and this decade. In the Next Mormon study, we found that 57% of Mormon Generation X members had had 0, 1, or 2 children of their own. So that's a very interesting and pretty dramatic change. The families that Mormons have had of their own have been smaller. Why does this matter? Why am I spending so much time talking about fertility? Because fertility also has very strong correlations with what's going on with institutional religion. Sociologically, there are a lot of very good reasons why birth control was helpful for children. Families that used birth control in the 60s, for example, were found to have fewer children born in poverty, higher birth weights, etc. It's not great for organized religion. What's great for organized religion is to have big families. And in evangelical culture, evangelicalism had many of the same kinds of growth patterns that Mormons enjoyed, and so their data is particularly interesting in Mormon social science. And apparently, about 3/4 of the growth that evangelicals enjoyed in the boom time of the late 20th century was because of their advantageous fertility over other Christian groups, and that's very similar with Latter-day Saints. So we're going to talk about marriage. One of the biggest social shifts that's happening in America is the age of marriage that is climbing. So in 1960, for men, the median age of marriage was 22.8. For Mormons, it was actually lower. And in 2016, for American men, 29.5. I would not be surprised if, when we get more recent statistics, it has hit the 30 mark. We'll see. So for men, the median age at marriage has climbed by nearly 7 years. For women, it's a pretty similar story, although they start out a little bit younger. They're getting married in 1960 with a median age of 20. And for them, it has climbed by more than 7 years. So pretty interesting major social change. Here we see it graphed by generation. This is from Pew. And you can look here to see how many people in each generation were married by age 32. It's very important when you're doing generational comparisons so that you understand what situation was relevant to a particular generation when they were the same age. So it's not just an age effect that someone was young or whatever. Here we're looking at apples to apples, generation to generation at the same age. And 2/3 of the silent generation were married by age 32, so 65% of members of the silent generation. And that compares to just over a quarter of millennials who were married by age 32. This is a massive social shift that's nearly 40 points in terms of a decline of marriage among the young. As you can imagine, this is a social shift that has not gone unobserved by LDS leaders who are concerned about it and have issued a number of statements encouraging young adults to get married. My favorite is this last one from Elder Ballard. It's just so very direct. You single adults need to date and marry. Please stop delaying. You can kind of hear the desperation in his voice. So we were interested to see in the next Mormon study, are Mormons following this national trend toward delaying marriage, and if so, by how much? For Mormons of the silent generation and the baby boomer generation, the median age at marriage was 22. For Gen Xers, it was 23, so a very slight increase, not by much. For millennials, though, who had gotten married so far, it was still only 22. That's not the whole story, though. And there is some reason, if you are an LDS leader, why you would be concerned about this. And that's because a number of people are not getting married at all, which is relatively new in American culture. In Mormonism, which is such a pro-marriage religion compared to others, also pro-endogamous, we rank only below Hindus and Orthodox Jews in the percentage of people of our religion who marry one another, so marry within the religion. Here we see Pew data from 2007, in which the never married part of the pie chart is only 12%, and then in 2016 it goes up to 18%, and Pew actually in 2014 found that it had gone up to 19%. That doesn't sound like a lot. It's only 6 or 7 points, not very much, but in terms of how we interpret data, that's a 50% increase in the never married Mormon population, which is significant and a very interesting change. And there's been a corresponding decrease in the percentage who are married, which was 71% in 2007 and then 65% in 2016. The reason that leaders are worried about this is not only because of LDS theology, which of course heavily emphasizes marriage and children, but also the very practical reality that married people with children are the structural backbone of activity in the church. The YSA activity rate in North America 10 years ago was 30%, apparently, and in the same briefing it was announced that married members of the same age had twice the activity rate. That's not all that different from what we see in other religions as well, that the highest, in terms of activity, people who are contributing and are the people who are raising children of their own. In fact, there have been very interesting studies within the life cycle to show that adults are at their most religious when they still have children at home. So let's talk about women's education and employment. This is one of the big shifts socially that we've seen. And this is a very short section, but I just wanted to point out Mormons who have completed at least some college. And I should say, this is wrong in the book, and I only discovered it yesterday. Mormons are smarter than I gave you credit for in the book, except for me, because I was the one that made the mistake. So the real numbers, 1981, 45% of Mormon women had completed some college. In 2016, it was 74%, which is a huge jump of 29 points of Mormon women who are getting education past high school. For men, 55% in 81, and then 70% in 2016, so a jump of 15 points. So there's been gains in both groups. Nationwide, women are the ones who have been making the greatest strides in education in the last half century, so this is not all that different from what we're seeing in terms of national patterns. But it's very interesting for Mormons. In the LDS Church in America, a number of studies have shown that a college degree is actually positively correlated with higher retention and activity. So education, for the most part, is nicely correlated with people staying in the church. The only exception to that is women who have advanced degrees. I'm sorry to many of the people in the room here. For women, if, according to our study, small number of women with advanced degrees, so high margin of error, keep that in mind, but still interesting. For women who have professional degrees like law, business, dental school, it doesn't matter. All education is additively good for church activity. But for women who have humanities degrees, no. Yeah. We'll just leave that right there. Generationally, again, we were able to ask people about their childhood experiences. So in addition to asking contemporary situation questions about whether people work right now, and if so, whether it's full-time or part-time, we also asked them, did your mother work when you were growing up? This measures the growth of full-time work among Mormon women. 33% of the Boomer Silent Generation, 46% of Gen Xers, and then more than half of Mormon millennials who are still in the church had mothers who worked full-time. One of the more surprising aspects of this data was that actually people who had mothers who worked outside the home were a little more likely to stay in the church as adults than people who had stay-at-home mothers. I'm just putting that out there. It may turn out to be nothing. All right, let's talk about racial diversity since 1960 in the church. This is a graph from Pew that was done in 2015. So Pew was looking at actual statistics of American diversity from 1965 to 2015, that half century, and then projecting, based on current immigration and fertility patterns, what America would look like for the next half century until 2065. And what we see here is a decline in the number of white Americans from about 83% down to 46% expected in 2065. We have African Americans holding steady at between 12 and 14%, a very significant growth of Hispanic Americans from the single digits to nearly a quarter of the population, and then also 1965, the Asian American population is almost non-existent. What happens, historians, in the mid-1960s? Immigration laws change, right? And we see that reflected in the data. So almost 14-fold, we see an increase in the projected Asian American presence in the United States in 2065. So in 2065, America is expected to become what is called a minority-majority population, meaning that no single racial group is expected to cross that 50% mark and have a majority of the population. So in the face of that kind of change, what do we see among Mormons? This is what Mormons looked like in 2006 in the National Faith Matters Survey. Non-white Mormons grouped together are 14% of the U.S. Latter-day Saint population, and white Mormons are 86%. This is a decade later in the Next Mormon study. It looks like it's the same bar graph, or pie chart. It looks like it hasn't been changed. We have 13% non-white Mormons in this study, 87% white. And so there's been very little growth in racial diversity in the United States in the LDS Church, despite the fact that it is happening abroad. In 2014, Pew looked at the most and least racially diverse religious groups in the United States. The most is the Seventh-day Adventist movement, second is Muslim, third is Jehovah's Witnesses, fourth Buddhist, and fifth nothing in particular. I find it particularly interesting that Seventh-day Adventism and Jehovah's Witnesses are in the top five, because those are groups to, you know, 19th century homegrown American religions to which Mormonism is sometimes compared, and they are considerably more racially diverse. Both of them have more than a third of Their members are white, roughly a third are black. For Jehovah's Witnesses, they have the other third essentially being Latinx, and then for Jehovah's Witnesses, it's a smattering of many things. For Mormons, Mormons are down here, and in this particular study, Mormons were 85% white and 15% non-white. So pretty similar to what we found as well. Mormons, however, are not the least racially diverse groups in America, if that gives you any comfort. The sad truth of what MLK said in the 1960s, that 11 o'clock on Sunday morning is the most segregated hour in America, still appears to be true. Episcopalians, Jews, Methodists, and Lutherans are actually more predominantly white than Mormons. So when we think about the accordion widening and narrowing, there's been almost no change. We don't have a lot of data about the racial composition of Mormonism in previous decades, but it was very interesting in that 1981 study that I referenced, when the researchers compared that data to national data from the GSS and other sources, they only compared it to the white population of that data, which kind of tells us everything we need to know about what the Mormon racial composition looked like. If it was more fruitful to only compare it to white Americans, it means that it was at least 9 in 10, probably pretty close to 100. And finally, you can wake up now. We're going to talk about sex. So this is another area where the United States has shifted tremendously in a relatively short time. In 1944, 12% of U.S. women and 40% of U.S. men said that it was morally acceptable to have sex before marriage. In 1999, it's 73% and 79%, respectively. So women in particular have had this tremendous sea change, 61 points of approval of premarital sex, and for men, 39 points approval in addition to what they already had. So approval is not necessarily behavior, so let's look at behavior. Actually, it turns out that approval is behavior. So this is data from about 17 years ago. By age 18, 58% of unmarried Americans have had sex. And then by the time unmarried Americans are age 44, 95% say they have had sexual intercourse. So Mormons are different. I wanted to give you this context before I show you the data about Mormon sexual behavior, because it's been fascinating to me how different people have responded. Researchers look at the Mormon sexual data and they say, no way. No way are all of those people staying virgins. Mormons, though, have looked at the Mormon data and said, oh my gosh, where have we gone wrong? Context is very important for understanding data. So think about this as the context of what's going on in the nation when you look at us. First, we're going to take a look at 1971. We do have data about women's sexual activity. Oh, this actually is both. 3% of Mormons who said they were active in the church and 23% of Mormons who claimed the identity but said they were not active said that they had had sex before marriage. So extremely low. In 2016, in the next Mormon study, 27% of active Latter-day Saints said that they had had sex before marriage, and about twice that among inactives, 52%. So again, context. Mormons look at this data and they say, 27%, you know, that's crazy. But when you're comparing it to what's going on in American culture, it's not that surprising. In fact, it's surprising that it is as low as it is. And it's very hard for a religious minority as small as we are. We're about 1.5 to 1.8% of the population in the United States now. It's very hard for any religious minority to resist the wider trends of culture unless you make the big decision to become Amish, to really cut yourselves off from the world, to not have education, to not have contact with outsiders, which has not been the Mormon way. Particularly since the beginning of the 20th century, Mormonism has been on a quest to become greater part of American culture, in fact, exemplifying American values. So the other part of the story for sexual activity among Latter-day Saints is that it's essentially twice what it is for active Latter-day Saints currently still in the church among former Mormons, people who have left the church. So just to take a look at some of this, we have on the far right, 31%. Oh, I'm sorry, this, that should be 27%. I hate it when I discover mistakes at all, but discovering them in an audience in front of, you know, you with several hundred people here, I'm so sorry. Yeah, but the point is, it's twice as much among former Mormons. The question that remains for us is the chicken and egg question of which came first, the sexual behavior, and then people decided that the church was an inhospitable environment or a judgmental environment and they couldn't stay. Or is the question that they are interested in having sex and so they leave the church? That's certainly the narrative that people in the church will tell you. The narrative that I hear from ex-Mormons is often quite different. I think that we are to the end. Let me just summarize a little bit. LDS family size is shrinking, but it's still above average. So in Utah, we saw it was basically half a child more. In the nation, maybe 7/10 of a child more. Women's employment and education patterns are becoming closer to the national averages. But in terms of race, Mormons are not diversifying as quickly as the nation as a whole. What was that? Yes. Oh, no, absolutely. This is only looking at data from the United States. I would posit that this is not the area in which Mormons want to be a peculiar people. And I'm going to have that be my last comment and open it up for questions. Thank you.